The number one resolution for people last year was to save more money, but nearly half gave up by February. Don't let that be you. Download Rocket Money to reach your financial goals this year. Track your spending, cut waste, and automate savings in one simple app. Rocket Money shows you all your expenses and categorizes them, so you know exactly where your money's going and where you're overspending. From there, the app cuts waste by canceling your unused subscriptions and lowering your bills. No customer service needed. With that money freed up, the app will automatically set some cash aside for your goals. Whether it's an emergency fund, paying off debt, or saving for vacation, Rocket Money's got you covered. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. And on average, users can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Make saving money a priority this year. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
This is the Blue Moon Podcast. Coming up, we've got all the news and views from Manchester City's week. It's your club, and this is your show.
The Manchester City emotional swingometer has jackknifed across the dial to the positive side again this week. Last week, it was all doom and gloom after defeats to United and Bodo Glimt, but now it's all sunshine and rainbows after wins against Wolves and Galatasaray. Good job there's no bogey teams in cursed away grounds coming up on the horizon. Before all that, though, let's focus on the good from this week. Results elsewhere made it a tense end to the Champions League group phase, but City are in the top eight and straight through to the round of 16 in early March. And after a comfortable afternoon against Wolves and with Arsenal losing to United, the gap in the Premier League is down to a very manageable 4 points. We'll discuss those games and the title race shortly, plus we'll hear from Jack from Rule the Roost about how Spurs are looking this season and just how the curse is going to rear its ugly head once again on Sunday. Or maybe not. Let's find out. I'm David Mooney. With me this week, I've got from the City Ramble podcast, Joe Butterfield.
Hello.
And from statcity.co.uk, Adam Carter.
Hello.
Hello, hello. Right, I discovered this week that Mark Gahey in the summer was apparently mid-MRI scan on his medical when he found out that his move to Liverpool had fallen through last summer. So, this is a really niche and specific question to start a podcast with, but have either of you ever found out any information mid-medical procedure? Maybe you're having your wisdom teeth out and you found out like something huge was going down in the news. What was going on? Joe, anything for you?
So when this question was first posited to me, I was like, "What on earth is this?" and then I realized. So it's not like I didn't find out news, but I once as a 10 or 11 year old, I was in year six. I know that much anyway. So I went to kick like a little miniature football in the house.
Yeah,
and so the you know the space between your little toe and the toe next to it.
Yeah.
A chair leg ended up in the middle of that with some force. And so it was dislocated basically to almost a right angle, my little toe.
So I had to go to
hospital and then have that bent back into place basically. And mid having that bent back into place, I was in like no matter how much anesthetic they give you, it's not enough. Like I was in streams of tears. And so my dad told me that I was going to get FIFA 04 as a reward for being so brave. And That made everything better. So yeah. that's kind of counts about something I found out mid medical procedure.
I think you just wanted to tell everyone that you dislocated your little toe.
There is a little bit of that as well. It's one of those like cool sort of like, you know, like wow, this is so hardcore, like here it is kind of stories. But it wasn't fun, let me
wasn't
tell you.
It wasn't fun. No, it doesn't sound fun. Adam, anything for you?
Yeah, mine's more of a pointless one, like Mark Gahey's Liverpool medical. In that, in 2018, I was admitted to hospital with a suspected brain hemorrhage. It's not as dramatic as that.
That's goodness as dramatic. Me. As the I was going to say that it started quite dramatically.
Yeah. And then basically, as part of the investigations, I had to have a lumbar puncture, and it was a student nurse that was doing it. And there was about five guys gathered round. It was the worst kind of experience I've ever had. I wouldn't even wish it on a United fan. That's how bad it was. And there was about three or four extractions that they took. And then the recovery was a couple of days, like banging headache because they take all your spinal fluid and your brain just sinks in the bottom of your head. So it's horrendous, right? And then we're waiting 2 days for these results. And then the doctor comes around and says, "We regret to inform you that we didn't take enough samples to get a conclusive kind of result. So we've not got any result for you." And it was like, we're going to have to do it again. I was like, no chance am I going through that ever again. I'd rather not know. And so a bit more dramatic than a MRI scan where you can just sit peacefully and let the machine do the work, but absolutely as pointless as that.
Yeah, not strictly speaking mid medical procedure, but very much
pointless outcome.
Yeah, but most very much kind of in the throes of a medical procedure. We'll give it here,
exactly.
This wasn't where I expected this podcast to start with, especially after two good performances. So let's go to the games, Adam. After two poor showings last week, what did you make of Wolves and Galatasaray? It must have been even if it wasn't kind of tip-top 10 out of 10 performances, it was just nice to be competent, I guess.
Yeah, when I was driving to the Wolves game, I said to my uncle who I go to the games with, if I could handpick any opposition to be playing today, it would have been Wolves at home. Yes, they were on a little bit of an uptick in terms of their standards, and that sounds really desperate, in terms of their current season form, but if I could choose any opposition, it would have been Wolves at home. So that was like a perfect tonic to get back on the horse. And the same with Galatasaray in terms of the level of opposition I would have liked to have faced. So whilst you can only beat what's in front of you, it was the perfect tonic to get back on, back to winning ways. And it's weird. I look at this season in comparison to last season and that bad spell that we had through last season, it didn't ever seem to be getting better. Whereas this season, it's almost one step forward, two steps back. But we've got that little chink of hope and a little ray of light that there's a couple of good performances around the corner and then we'll probably get back to square one again. So a weird one in terms of not gathering momentum, but two perfect results that I would, if you could pick any opposition, it would probably would have been those two, because we got the chance to see Sane and Gundogan as well from a novelty point of view from the opposition there.
I forgot how much you're Mr. Nostalgia. Yeah. Oh, yeah, those guys were back, were they? Oh, yeah, nice to see them. Hope they don't score. Oh, yeah, they'll be fine.
You know me too well.
Yeah, Joe, two comfortable games in the end, but was there any worry that they were starting to drift a little bit in that? I mean, let's say Wolves had scored on 60, 65 minutes. Let's say Galatasaray had scored on 60, 65 minutes. They become a little bit more tetchy, don't they?
Yeah, absolutely. But I think that's always the way for pretty much any game, really. I didn't feel like that was particularly at risk with either of the games. If anything, it kind of felt like we'd gone, basically both games, really, we'd gone 2-0 up and just sort of decided, right, well, that's us done for the day. Now let's just keep
going. Nothing's
going
to happen now. Yeah.
Yeah, let's just worry about keeping a clean sheet, I suppose, more, as much as anything else, which I think, you know, is also good from the defence point of view. Like, obviously, with, you know, the fact that a bit of our problems in recent, well, basically in 2026, a bit of our recent problems have been, you know, the defensive side of things and the fact we've conceded goals just as regularly as we score them, if not more. So I think for them to sort of get two clean sheets out this week has been a big thing as well. But honestly, I think I was maybe more worried about the sort of the drift state of the game against Galatasaray, because obviously there was goal difference riding on that when it came to the actual Champions League table itself. But in terms of as I was watching them, I never really felt in either of them that there was any real danger of us conceding, because I think we were quite in control. Like as Adam said there, like the nature of the opposition we were playing against, like Wolves, obviously, despite doing quite well in the last sort of month or so, are ultimately still rock bottom of the table for a reason. And Galatasaray, like they just played a way that was like, in that first half, it was just like they were trying to give Jeremy Doku all the space in the world to do whatever he wanted. It was crazy. So I think that, yeah, they never really felt like they were, maybe with the exception of one save that Donnarumma had to make against Otamendi. So I'm on the nostalgia hype now. It was against Osimhen. It never really felt like there was really much chance of the games ending any other way than they did. So yeah, two very comfortable games, like you say.
Yeah, and I think the best Wolves did was a corner with a flick at the near post that landed on the roof of the net, and I'm just kind of like, if that's all that's going to be there to trouble you, then you know it should be quite a comfortable game. Adam, how much better, but maybe fresher did City look with Gehi and Semenyo coming in for the Wolves game? They kind of needed some fresh legs in that team. These two come in. Obviously, Marmoush comes in as well, and Haaland and Foden is rested. That change around seemed to help them a bit.
Yeah, it's always nice to have the shiny new toys on display. I think everyone got a lift in the stadium as well, because after those two results, it could have been a bit toxic. I think most of the majority of City fans can see the bigger picture and see what's going on here, see what the way we're trying to play, the injuries that we've been up against, the form, you know, and we know how good we've had it for so long, over the last 10 years or so. So there could have been elements that went a bit toxic there, but because you've got that fresh, the fresh new players to go and see, and I think that just changed the tone of the atmosphere a bit, and Gay slotted straight in as if he'd played there for the last 10 years himself. So really positive debut for him. Obviously, Semenyo is still finding his feet, but you know, in terms of being in the City shirt, but he's hit the ground running in terms of those goals that he's scoring. Lovely touch to set it out and then put it in the far corner. Just took it in his stride. Gay again, like I say, just marshalling the defence. It was shades of Steve McManaman's debut in terms of
all
points.
The debuts you could have picked, yeah. And you went. I mean, yeah. McManaman did have a good debut. I'm not going to deny that.
He pointed a lot on his debut, so that's what I was getting at. If you want a defensive debut, it's the much fabled Eloquin Mangala debut that we can compare against.
Can you stop naming players who had good debuts and then fell off a cliff? I mean, we'll be talking about Tijani, yeah. Reinders next. That's a joke. Don't worry.
Oh, week one, Reinders is goated. So yeah, absolutely. I think the shiny new toy effect really kind of put a nice gloss over the second half performance, because it was a bit dire. But yeah, really pleased to see them. I always like to see a new player. And I think he's really going to address the issues we've got at centre-back there. And it'll be interesting to see when, like, Guardiola and Diaz are back, what the actual back three, back four look like in terms of that, the middle of defence. So really interesting. It's a nice problem to have, but the injuries just, they seem to be mounting up.
Yeah, stacking up at the minute. And, yeah. I mean, John got in touch to ask about that, Joe, about how the defence looks going forward. And I guess that kind of is pinned to the fact that Semenyo and Gehi were not available for the Galatasaray game. And City just carried on where they left off. It was a good, solid defensive performance where they'd left off against Wolves. And that was basically Ait Nouri coming in. I mean, they had no holding midfielder against Galatasaray. They had to ask Nico O'Reilly to do it, and it just looked a natural there.
Yeah, he looked great against. He looked very good against. He played there against Newcastle as well, didn't he? Am I remembering that right? Yeah. In the League Cup, he played there, and I think he's looked. You know, considering when he came in against Newcastle, I was like, oh my god, Pep's just like doing anything he can to avoid putting O'Reilly at left back here, sort of trying to almost manage his fitness a little bit and give him one of the lesser running roles. But I thought he actually turned out to be quite good at it, and he's turned out to be quite serviceable as like a you know, worst case scenario rotation option, if both Rodri and Nico G are unavailable. But I mean, like the defensive performance, I think the fullbacks have been a big thing in this sort of return, like these return couple of games, because I think that the fact that, you know, when we were playing with Ake at left back and Rico Lewis at right back, like it never really looked comfortable, did it? I mean, the United game in particular was one where you just look at that and think, how are these two supposed to deal with the pace that they've got going the other way? And, you know, Rico Lewis, as much as I love Rico Lewis and think that he's a very good technical player, and for my money, has a place in this squad somewhere, whether it's like a fifth choice midfielder or something like that. You know, you need these kind of players to pad out a squad. But a defensive minded right back he is not, unfortunately. And I think that Nunez coming back, and who, you know, this time last year I was looking at Nunez and thinking, oh my god, this is just another defensively not very defensively minded right back who's not got the defensive nous to do this to any decent standard. This season he's
Take him out of the team, it falls apart.
Yeah, this season, with the exception of that Brighton game early on, where he decided he was going to play basketball halfway through the in our penalty area and give away a penalty. I think that he's actually been comfortably one of our most reliable performers in the team. Outside of that, it's actually like you say, it's crazy that it feels like if you take him out of that back line, you've lost something like pretty substantial. I think that mainly comes down to the fact that, you know, If we lose Diaz, Kuzunov can come in, and Kuzunov is still ultimately a high quality footballer, even if it isn't the level of Diaz, for example. At left back, you know, if you lose O'Reilly, you've got Ait Nouri, and at right back, I just think that drop off is like so much harsher than anywhere else on the pitch. That having Nunez back in the team is is big. And I think that's why, you know, even with the midfield being changed around a little bit, ultimately with a solid back line, it looked comfortable. And Ake playing at centre back is always much nicer to watch than Ake at left back in his current state. So yeah, I think just a good back four being back in play is what ultimately made the difference for me, I think, midweek.
Yeah. Adam, let's look at the forward line, because Foden was rested for both of the games. He was brought out of the team and then in the second game came on for the injured Doku about half an hour, 40 minutes in. Haaland was rested as well and then came back in for Galatasaray, where he scored from open play. What do you make of what's going on in the front line as well? And you chuck in Doku as well there, who was brilliant against Galatasaray and has once again had to go off injured.
Yeah, so if we start with Foden, I'm concerned. Is that dramatic to say that I'm concerned?
I don't think so.
Yeah, he had a what I would call a mini resurgence early December, and I thought, oh, we've got Foden back. I've missed Foden since his player of the season. So I've really been desperate for him to hit the heights of that season. It's not quite happened, and I feel a bit daft saying like I'm concerned. If Doku doesn't get injured last night, Foden doesn't get in that side ahead of him in that central role. I like to see. I think Doku could only play that central role against Galatasaray, or he played it pretty much similar at Arsenal away when we had all backs against the wall and he was the one getting us out and up the pitch. So I do like Doku in that central position. I don't think every opposition that we face would allow that to be a success. But having said that, I don't think Foden was getting in the team ahead of a fit Doku there last night, which is a concern. When he came on, he just looked ineffective. He looked ineffective in the derby as well. I know he hurt his hand, but I think it was the wrong call to start him there. And then to wrap it up in terms of like the Haaland issue with the front line, obviously the Wolves game being dropped or rested, however you want to phrase it, I don't think that was the sensation of the century. I think he needed resting anyway. He probably shouldn't have played the Exeter game in early January. He played that, so you're looking when's his next rest going to come. And I think that just naturally would have been that Wolves game. So I wasn't too alarmed by the drop there. But obviously really nice. He took his goal well. Doku, a fantastic through ball. That gaping hole, he just exploited it well and put it in behind for Haaland.
First open play goal since the 20th of December, yeah, for him.
I was never worried for that side. And I would quote Pep to say, like, don't slag the strikers off because they'll score, they'll soon silence you.
I'm not slagging him off. I'm just providing the statistics, yeah, and exactly, giving you the platform, know, yeah, to slag it's off or me. Not slag off at your, yeah, own will.
It's usually me that hides behind the stats. No, generally, obviously, if by his standards, it's a concern. Bigger picture stuff, absolutely not a concern for that. Yeah. But those two, it was evident that there was a drop-off. I was more confident on Haaland turning his corner than Foden turning his, let me put it that way.
Yeah. Marmoush scored against Wolves, Joe. Nice little run and finish. Great cross from Nunes as well. I'm going to use the phrase all over the place against Galatasaray because there was a couple of opportunities he had. One, he stood on the ball. A couple of times he ended up kind of not really getting anything when like just finding a way through when he maybe had a clearer path to take. What have you made of his week?
I think it's the sign of a player who's coming back into consecutive starts for what, the first time this season, is it? I don't think he's really played very much at all for City this season. I think coming off the back of AFCON is good for him, because I think he got a couple of goals in AFCON, didn't he? So maybe coming in with a bit more confidence than he would have been before he left. The Wolves game, he was great. I think he took his chance really well, and I think he was very sort of like active in that front line and sort of like doing a lot of pressing and stuff like that. Against Galatasaray, I genuinely forgot he was on the pitch until sometime in the second half. I think he didn't really impose himself on that game at all, really. And I don't know whether that's a him and Haaland thing. I don't know whether that's just because it's inconsistency with coming back into the side for the first time in a while, and maybe we're doing things a little bit differently than when he was sort of in the squad towards the end of last season and he was looking so effective then. I'm not concerned at all. It's just a case that he didn't look as good on the Wednesday as he did on on the Saturday against Wolves, which is absolutely, you know, it's absolutely fine. But he does put himself about a bit. And like you say, he had a couple of, if he doesn't stand on that ball, he has a very good 1v1 chance potentially, or he could have a chance to sort of take a shot on goal. And that's one of those things that can kind of happen to any player at any time, really. It's not like a major sort of failing of his that happens. So yeah, I'm not concerned, but I think it would have been nice to see him put two good consecutive games together, because especially in a time where, you know, like you say, Haaland's not scored for 10 games. And I think that, well, not from open play anyway. And I think that, you know, for me, the more frustrating thing about Haaland hasn't been the fact that he hasn't scored, but I think it's the fact for a few weeks now, it hasn't looked like he's really given the same sort of effort and, you know, sort of put, he hasn't imposed himself on games off the ball in the way that he had been so well at the start of the season. And I think that genuinely just does come down to tiredness, because, you know, I think my mate kind of pointed out to me that in like the treble season, when Haaland was so good and scoring 52 goals he got all season in all competitions or something like that.
If only we had a stats man to help us out with something like that.
If only someone did this who could tell me. I think you know, the thing with him in that season was that we were a lot more free scoring, but when we were a couple of goals up, we brought him off at like 60, 70 minutes regular, because we had Julian Alvarez sat on the bench ready to come on and also be a goal threat in his place. And because Marmoush got injured, and then Pep didn't want to really bring in Marmoush before going away to AFCON again, and then obviously he's been at AFCON, he's been playing like 90 minutes just non-stop for like 3 or 4 months, and for me, you can see that that's had a major like physical effect on him in a way that we haven't really seen in previous seasons, because he's never really been put in a position where he has to do that. So I'm hoping that the return of Marmoush, if nothing else, can sort of take some of the pressure off Haaland having to do these consistent 90s, and then we might start to see the Haaland of the start of the season again, rather than the sort of one we've seen for the last month, where he just looks really stodgy and ineffective, as well as the fact that he's not scoring goals from open play consistently until the Galatasaray game. It's more the fact that it's more everything else that he's not doing well that is the problem for me.
He just looking at Marmoush's stats for this season, two-thirds of his games have been for City this season. One-third of them have been for Egypt. He's played 9 games for Egypt, 18 for City. And of that 18, most of them are from the bench, and most of them are late on from the bench. So it, like, yeah, in terms
very,
of minutes
very
played,
late on.
He's not played a huge number of minutes.
I didn't realize I was wasting $415 a month until I downloaded Rocket Money. I thought I had my finances under control until the app laid out all my spending and categorized it for me. Takeout, shopping, and unused subscriptions were quietly draining my account. And as a result, my savings took a backseat. But Rocket Money doesn't just tell you what you're wasting money on. It takes action to save you money. First, the app looks at your income and monthly expenses and calculates how much you can safely spend each day to stay under budget. Rocket Money also finds and cancels unwanted subscriptions for you, and even negotiates better rates on your bills, so you have more money in your pocket. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. It's time to simplify your finances and take control of your money. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Ad-free episodes are available on Patreon. Sign up at patreon.com/Blue Moon Podcast.
Let's talk about, Joe talked about playing basketball before. That leads us quite nicely into the handball, the VAR and the rejected overturn. Adam, the referee went to the screen. That means only one thing, doesn't it?
Yes,
no, apparently
exactly.
Not.
Let's just address the real travesty here is that it wasn't spotted in real time, let alone going to the screen and then overturning it. I sit in the east stand, so it was right in front of me in terms of this side of the pitch. Thought it in real time. Couldn't believe that it wasn't given. I thought, oh, he's given us advantage. We've hit the post. There's no advantage gained. Let's bring it back. That didn't happen. Then it came up on the screen. He's being told to go to the screen, so everyone cheers. Great. It's nailed on. Then when you watch it back, the player, who was deemed to be in a natural position, by the way, absolutely wasn't, actually clawed the ball with his hand. Like, his hand moves in a curved motion as if to stop Marmoush bringing it back into play. So absolute nonsense, absolute glaring error. I'm actually glad now that Guardiola has started calling it out now after 10 years of, you know, minding his P's and Q's with it. So it was an absolute horrendous decision.
Can I make a confession on that decision?
Go on.
I don't hate it. I don't hate that that is not handball. Now, in terms
of... you'd have to not give all the others then,
yeah,
though, wouldn't you?
Now, exactly. That's the difference. Yeah. If none of the others were given for the same thing, then fine. But like,
he actually claws it, you know. When you watch it again,
I just feel like you should allow defenders to be able to use their arms to balance instead of having to
right,
whack them behind.
Absolutely,
the back.
That might sound like I'm backtracking. Absolutely, but in the current class,
they don't do that currently.
They don't
I know.
Do that. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
That's the problem.
That's the issue.
That's the main thing.
I also don't hate Joe that Marmoush gets the ball after this incident and could just score. Like, he hits the post. So, what level of advantage? I mean, I know he hasn't given it for having advantage.
Yeah.
But what level of advantage kind of does mitigate that? Because let's say the goalkeeper makes the greatest save that you have ever seen. Does he then deserve to have to face a penalty?
Yeah.
You're right.
This is the thing, isn't it? Like, obviously, because he hit the post, it's like, it feels like, as Adam said, no advantage has been gained because we've hit the post. So it's like,
That's true, but it's an advantage.
but I also fully understand the idea that he had a clear shot on goal. I mean, it was from a tight angle, but it was a clear shot on goal that he had. However, the fact of the matter is that as we've kind of agreed here, is that we're seeing that decision getting given so many times in the Premier League at the moment. And I think
that's the egregious thing.
We've had it against, because I thought in real time, like as I was watching it, I was kind of with you in the sense that I was like, look, it's point blank. Like, what can the defender really do about the fact this is hitting his arm? But at the end of the day, he has blocked a cross. And that we have seen in recent months/seasons.
Grealish in the cup final, that was a nonsense decision, but it's according to the laws, it's the correct decision.
That's the thing that kind of really annoys me. And what I find even more frustrating about it is the way that in the sort of the days after, that obviously as Adam said, Guardiola sort of came out and said his piece on it. And I don't think it was just aimed at him. That was sort of like the straw.
It's a build-up of 10 years.
In terms of a lot of horrendous decisions, including the Newcastle game, the United game, like where we had some suspicious refereeing decisions. And I won't use the word agenda, but there'll be some people screaming it at their phones right now.
Yeah. If Jeremy Doku's knees could talk. Yeah.
But I think but what annoyed me the most is that because of that Guardiola reaction, it's felt like everybody has sort of taken it upon themselves to sort of treat this referee, who it was his first game in the Premier League, and don't we know it because everyone's talking about it. Like I would never have known that it was this guy's first Premier League game ever until everyone made it the headline after the game. But he's being treated like a war hero for making a decision and like going to the, as if going over to the screen and not overturning the decision that you didn't make. So like he didn't see it in real time. He's gone over to the screen and decided, oh yeah, I was right. Even though like we've seen in the Premier League so many times, that says for me, it's crazy. It's crazy the sort of like the I don't know what the words call it, other than like the protection that he's been given by like the media after the game. And this isn't like a media hate City thing, because I think I find that thing a bit cringe nowadays. But I think that, you know, it's just more of a they went too far in the other direction. Like, it was a contentious decision, no matter what you might think of it. If you think that it was not a penalty, I'm sure that you should be able to look at this and see why people would think it is a penalty. And the fact that everybody in the media is kind of, or well, say everybody, a significant portion of the larger media outlets.
I was going to say not everybody, because one of the things that has really wound me up this week was, Adam, I don't know if you've heard this, but there's been a couple of people who have said things like, yeah, I think it was a penalty. I think he's wrong to reject it, but I like that he did it. And I'm just kind of like,
you can't have both.
This makes no sense.
Yeah, you're not allowed both. I think there's a there's a. I've got to have to word, use the word agenda there. I think because it's us, it's the big bad wolf that's got the decision against them, and he's.
Listen, lads, it's fine to say you don't like City. It's absolutely fine. Like it's a valid position to not like City.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, they don't need to use that just that decision to justify it, do they? There's plenty of other things they can bash us for. But yeah, I think we're all coming to the same conclusion around it being the referee's debut, and don't we know it? Basically, I think it was I thought he did well outside of that, to be fair, as well. So it was a bit of a shame for him. But I don't think he'll get a City game anytime soon.
Yeah, well, speaking of City games coming up, let's look at the bigger picture now with the title race, because this weekend was the fourth time that this season that City have closed the gap on Arsenal at the top of the table after losing ground on six different occasions. After some pretty poor runs of form at different points since August, to be 4 points behind at this stage feels like a bit of a win. So let's have a look at the season's title race so far. Back in April 2022, when City were trying to hold off a title challenge from Liverpool, the two teams played out a 2-2 draw at the Etihad. City led the game twice, they had a goal disallowed for a tight offside, and they had a huge chance to win it in stoppage time, a chance that Riyad Mahrez put over the bar. It left City a point ahead of their rivals when they might have gone 4 points clear. After that game, this was Pep Guardiola's main thought.
I had to review the game and we missed the opportunity, you know, to beat them. A feeling that we leave them alive.
City did hold off Liverpool to win the title that season, but it went all the way down to the wire. And for all of City's poor form in spells this season, league leaders Arsenal are still within touching distance. It's a comparison that occurred to the Athletic Sam Lee on a recent episode of the Let Me Talk podcast.
Do you remember the old "we left them alive" saying from 2022?
Are you about to tell me that you feel that Arsenal are leaving City alive?
Well, they have done twice. Arsenal can't keep dropping points after City mess up. It's very unusual. And look, unless they just win it despite trying their best not to. But Arsenal dropping points again does make me feel like they might regret it in a couple of months.
That was after Arsenal had drawn with Nottingham Forest. Earlier in the day, City had lost the Manchester derby, and a gap that could have been 9 points was only 7. A week later, maybe Arsenal did begin to regret their missed opportunities. They lost to United after City had beaten Wolves. Here's their manager Mikel Arteta speaking on Sunday evening.
The Liverpool game was very different, the first and the second half. When we go to Forest and you look back what we conceded, nothing, and the five big chances that we didn't score. But that's a reality as well, and we play in every three single days. But it's a reality that we haven't won in three games in the Premier League, and we need to pick a point now.
After draws with Liverpool and Nottingham Forest and a defeat to United, Arsenal's lead has been slimmed down to 4 points. That's smaller than the gap was on New Year's Eve, before City's poor run of form started. If City have been leaving the door open, Arsenal haven't been punishing them.
Of course you're going to win games. We cannot think about the things, you know? We have an incredible result in Nottingham Forest tough game, and after we played three games and analysed how we played really good.
That was how Guardiola was feeling after the 1-1 draw with Brighton 3 weeks ago. At that time, he was happy with the performances, but that was City's third draw in a row. Already 6 points behind Arsenal at kick-off that evening, fans were fearing the worst when City dropped those 2 points. But the next day, Arsenal didn't capitalise. Arteta was putting a positive spin on it when he was asked if it was a missed opportunity.
Yeah, every time you don't win. But then we would have been 12, 15 or 20 points ahead, you know. I have to really praise the team, the players individually, for what they've done in this Christmas period. To come out of this period with all the issues that we had, in the position that we are, in our strong position that we are, I think the boys deserve my credit and everybody's recognition.
In the next game, it was widely felt that City needed to bounce back because Arsenal surely wouldn't keep letting them off the hook. But then they lost the Manchester derby. Guardiola was asked if he was concerned at the amount of points his team were dropping.
Yeah, concerned the points, obviously, to score goals is part of the stats or the be good and the punishes this situation, not that game. Like it happened the previous three. Today is the day that we were not here, but so far we have been in Sunderland, was extraordinary. We've been in many games, and the games in Brighton or Chelsea or the last game in Newcastle. So, but today not.
He didn't know at that time that Arsenal would again fail to punish City's slip-up. They drew with Nottingham Forest to leave the gap at 7 points. Ahead of the game with Wolves, and with his team not being as far behind the leaders as they might have been, Guardiola hinted that they needed to make the most of the opportunity.
Look in Champions League, look in the Premier League, look in FA Cup, in Carabao Cup. So this is the best team right now. Hopefully we can be close and getting better and give us one chance, you know, to catch them.
The weekend just gone was the fifth time this season that Arsenal have dropped points after City have played. On three of those occasions, City had failed to win, meaning that Arsenal didn't punish them when they could have done. How long, though, will that carry on happening? Guardiola knows his team needs to take their chances in front of goal to avoid needing favours from Arsenal's opponents.
I don't have a crystal ball to know what's going to happen in the future, so I don't know. Score goals or be clinical is part of, I would say, that all the stats, you know, many things that you can solve. Of course, you can create chances and expecting goals are higher than everyone, but you don't have to do it.
City have dropped points in 9 games already this season, including 5 defeats. To only be 4 points off the top with that record suggests that they've been, as Guardiola might say, left alive. It also means that if they're going to have any hope of overtaking Arsenal, they're going to have to keep the pressure on and return to winning ways consistently. Some might be wishing it wasn't away games with Tottenham and Liverpool coming up next.
Hi guys, it's David Seaman, ex-City player. I've played a few times for Arsenal as well and England, but you're listening to the Blue Moon Podcast.
If you enjoy the show, please give it a rating and a review wherever you get your podcasts.
Now, Joe, given Arsenal have continually not punished City, how are you feeling at the minute?
It's tough because I find myself going through this absolute doom spiral of like every single time that we drop points, whether it's been Chelsea, Brighton, and then you have the really bad one like United, and you just go like, we are just not good enough to win this league at all. Like, we are categorically just as bad as we were last season in different ways and for different reasons, but we are just as inconsistent and not title competing as last season, and it's all a disgrace. Maybe it's time that Pep does go at the end of this season. Maybe the rumors about him wanting to walk, like, maybe I'd be okay with that. And then Arsenal play a day later, and Nottingham Forest,
yeah.
and somehow we're still in it every time, and now we're 4 points behind them, and it's like, maybe everyone's bad. Like, maybe the whole league is bad. And I hate how this sounds, because this feels exactly like how Liverpool and Arsenal fans have sounded every time that we've won the league for the last like 8 years, where it's like, oh well, actually the state of the league is just so poor that City just walk to it every year. But this season genuinely feels like it is going to be the best of the worst that wins it, really, because I don't think anybody's putting together like a if you drop 2018-19. City's Guardiola City or Klopp Liverpool into this Premier League season, they walk it. It's not even close at this point. But Arsenal just have, for whatever reason, this kind of weird, whether it's a mental block or whether they're just actually not as good as we think they are, and they really are just reliant on set pieces and own goals. Like, whatever it is, they're just not capable of putting together the wins that they need. Like, if they could conceivably be 12, 13 points clear from us at this point, but they just refuse to do it. So, you know, when that happens, it's hard to get to this stage of the season before points behind and not feel like there is, you know, definitely a chance that we can maybe push it all the way.
Yeah. Adam, how about City and consistency, though? Because, I mean, surely Arsenal can't keep letting City off the hook. So, like, if they are going to keep dropping points, like, is the problem actually that City will keep dropping points as well, rather than City punish? Like, as much as Arsenal haven't punished City, have City not punished Arsenal?
Yeah, we've definitely not taken advantage of it. And I think with the inconsistency that we've talked about there, this is probably, Arsenal dropping points is probably the only thing that could spur us on, excuse the pun, for the next game. Because we need a kick up the arse at some point. And every time we've dropped points this season, I've personally conceded that it's Arsenal's title. Then they keep letting us back. And then in my heart of hearts, I hark back to the 2011-12 season where we were 8 points behind United with 6 games to go, and we claimed that back. So half that, with more than 3 times that to go. It's, you know, or just about that. It's mad. So
I want to. I do. I, sorry to be the bringer of bad news on that one, though. But for that season, City basically had to be perfect over six games. So they had to win six games. Whereas for this one, they've got to be more consistent over a lot longer. Does that not make 4 points over, I don't know how many games left, what is it, like 15 games left, like whatever it is, like, does that not make that trickier?
It does, but also I don't think Arsenal are showing signs of faltering as well, aren't they? So we're not to claw it because we've still got them to play as well. I think that's a massive boost. Obviously, you've got to win that game if you want to win the league. So hypothetically, if you win that, it's 1 point. And we know what can happen with six games left. So we've got, I take your point, but I'm going to flip it the other way and say we've got longer for things to go wrong on their side as well.
Okay.
Do you know what I mean? Rather than having to put a long run together. So I'm hoping for that now. So every time I concede it, they let us back in. We'd be daft not to take advantage of it now. But I also don't think it'd be the biggest travesty. It wouldn't be a bottle job on our side if we didn't capitalise on it now. Do you know what I mean? I think it's still theirs to lose, but we've got a few things. We've got history in our favour that when it does come to the business end, even last season, when it came to the last running of last season, that was when we hit our best form. We've done that consistently under Guardiola. He ends the seasons better than he starts them, and let's bank on that for the rest of this one.
The number one resolution for people last year was to save more money, but nearly half gave up by February. Don't let that be you. Download Rocket Money to reach your financial goals this year. Track your spending, cut waste, and automate savings in one simple app. Rocket Money shows you all your expenses and categorizes them, so you know exactly where your money's going and where you're overspending. From there, the app cuts waste by canceling your unused subscriptions and lowering your bills. No customer service needed. With that money freed up, the app will automatically set some cash aside for your goals. Whether it's an emergency fund, paying off debt, or saving for vacation, Rocket Money's got you covered. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. And on average, users can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Make saving money a priority this year. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
This is the Blue Moon Podcast. But don't worry, it'll be over soon.
With that in mind as well, Joel, Joel's been in touch on Instagram to say, do you think we have a better chance of winning the Champions League or Premier League this year? I'm normally more confident with the league, but our inconsistency makes it difficult. However, I feel that we have the squad to beat anyone on our day, so maybe we have a better chance in Europe. And obviously finishing the top eight in the Champions League table means that they get to go through to the last 16 without the extra game. We know it'll be one of Inter, Real Madrid, Benfica or Bodo Glimt. So naturally it's Real Madrid because that's how the Champions League works. I take the point that in a one-off game, like the best team in Europe isn't the one that always wins the Champions League. But like the league proves your consistency. The Champions League is now effectively just a cup competition. So maybe one-off games, that could be a success story.
I understand the logic. Amos of the City Ramble Parish is also of the opinion that we've got a better chance in the Champions League. But for me, I just don't see it personally. I think that everything that you can say about why we can't win the Premier League applies equally to Europe. I know that technically a cup competition, you know, anything can happen in one-off games, but they're not one-off games. They're other than the final, they're two-off games. And you know, do you back us to put two consistent, but like equally two dominating performances over you know a week or two separated against, you know, the likes of Real Madrid or even Inter Milan, maybe a different beast, but I mean, Bodo Glimpse, like, I don't see that happening after a couple of weeks. I fear them more than anyone else after last week. So
it's just 2020 again, though, isn't it? When, take Real Madrid apart, home and away, fantastic. Lose to Leon in the next round. All right.
Yeah, this is the thing. This is kind of my what it comes down to for me, that I don't, you know, maybe we do beat Real Madrid this time. Who knows? But does that mean that I think we will beat whoever comes afterwards? Like, probably not. And I think that as much as it's like, well, the squad can beat anyone on our day, like, that is true. But we've also seen on many occasions this season that we can lose and we can put in horrendous performances and we can just draw out of nowhere for, you know, fail to put any chances away and just like bin the game off completely. And I think that that's why, you know, obviously that maybe there's probably a mathematician's reason why, like, the Champions League, because of the fewer games, there is a higher chance of winning that than the Premier League, where we've got, like you say, 15, 16 games to go. But for me personally, I'm still banking on, if I had to pick between one of the two, I'd still say the Premier League, because I think I can just already start to see the cracks with Arsenal a little bit and their sort of, their classic mental wall that they can't get over is maybe starting to creep in a little bit. But with the Champions League, I don't know. I just feel like there's too many good teams in the Champions League left over. There's too many ones who I think that, you know, if we drew Bayern or even Arsenal or, you know, a team like that, it, you know, honestly, even Real Madrid, I'd look at that and just think, oh my God, like, can we beat those guys over two legs? Like, maybe not. So yeah, for me, it's Premier League over Champions League, but I do fully understand the logic behind why someone would say Champions League is the more likely of the two.
Yeah. Adam, would you fancy a March-April time where City were chucked into a Carabao Cup final with Arsenal? They got the Premier League game with Arsenal, maybe a double header in the Champions League against Arsenal, and then an FA Cup draw with Arsenal as well. That could be a nice fun month or so, couldn't it?
So do you reckon we'll play Arsenal? I hate it when fixtures end up like that. We had a spell when we played Everton in the Carabao Cup semi-finals, yeah. And we played them in the league, and there was reverse fixtures and delayed, postponed fixtures. It just, for the aesthetics of the fixture list, it just ruins it for me a bit. So I'd like to avoid Arsenal at all costs, just because I think you could learn a lot about each other in games that aren't affecting your Premier League game. Obviously, if we're to triumph over Arsenal in any game this season, I'd want it to be, and in any competition, I'd want it to be the Premier League. So if we could have stay away from them as much as possible in that running, that'd be great. I don't fear them as such in terms of head-to-head. I think we'll have enough in the big game. It's just that's a lot of big games to have enough in. So. Yeah. I'd rather, and I also in Europe, I like playing against non-domestic teams as well. Just the proper factor of it should be against. Anyway, I want to beat Madrid three times this season, so that'd be nice if we meet them at some point in that. Because that feels like a domestic game now. The amount of we probably play them more frequently than we do a Burnley or someone like that. So, as you've just outlined that fixture congestion there, and we obviously are going in all fronts, the injury list just was the first thing I went to then when you were reeling those kind of fixtures that we're going to be faced. And I think injuries could be a real concern for us in that running. As much as I've just been bigging up our status in a end of season running, I really don't feel like we've had this multitude of injuries like we have this year. We've had injuries to big players, but it like just De Bruyne or just Kompany. But now it seems to be two, three, four of them that are all out for 3 weeks, 4 weeks, 5 weeks. And I worry about our staying power if that continues. But yes, let's avoid Arsenal, but not because I'm scared of them.
Okay, I like that you've really kind of underlined that. Anyway, they've got to get to the Carabao Cup final first, which will come to the second leg of the semi-final shortly. But first, given the points gap is now back down to four, it's a good job it's not a couple of bogey grounds up next for City in the league. Otherwise, Spurs, that's first and then Anfield. Great, excellent. Good luck, everyone. Here's Jack from Rule the Roost starting once again with the politics of what a Spurs win would mean for the bigger picture.
Well, I mean, it's... It's almost inevitable, isn't it? I don't want to come on here and do the gloating Spurs fan thing. Look, I feel like we've got, you know, a good rapport, David, that we've built down the years, but it's almost inevitable at this point, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, Spurs will win. Arsenal will extend their lead at the top of the table and everybody is unhappy. That's how it works.
Yeah, we've just had a conversation before we started recording about rage baiting online, right? I'm not going to be snared into I want Spurs to lose conversations about us doing Poznans at White Hart Lane, all that type of thing, right? But I don't want Arsenal to win the Premier League, I'll say that.
Well, I saw a post, like obviously posting the Son Heung-min chance with Stefan Ortega from the back end of a couple of seasons ago with the phrase, just like, here we are again. And underneath, I saw somebody had replied to it by saying, if Thomas Frank wins this weekend, then he really does deserve to be out of a job. So, like, honestly, it's like, how does this keep happening every season?
I don't know. I don't know. And it just feels very, you know, Spursy dash typical City, doesn't it? You know, yeah. Here we are again. Here we are again, my friend.
So what is happening right now? Because obviously there's a lot of discontent with Thomas Frank. Just looking at the table, currently sitting in 14th, which I imagine is below where you were hoping to be, having had the season that you'd had last season. So, like, how has it got to this? What's been the journey to this point?
Look, as I said of Ange Postecoglou beforehand, there are factors outside of the manager's control. The squad has been built poorly. You know, if we're kind of looking at the ship of Theseus or Trigger's broom, as some people might know it as, what Tottenham Hotspur are today is definitely not the Tottenham Hotspur that were plying their trade under Maurizio Pochettino a decade ago now. Pretty much every single brilliant player we've had has been replaced by one that is not really fit for purpose, and that has finally caught up with us. We finished 17th last year. I wouldn't be surprised if we finished 17th again this year. That aside, Thomas Frank is playing his hand poorly. The football's unambitious. His general sort of demeanour is one that is guarded, is cautious. It feels immediately like he just isn't. You know, and I know some people will say, I know what the external narrative is Tottenham have ideas above their station. Tottenham need to stick with a manager sooner or later. But what I think I can say, and I think we can all have a good faith conversation about, is that Spurs, yes, right, we're not winning the Premier League every other year, but we are still a club of a certain quality that belongs in a certain place within the Premier League. And we have, enough of a fan base and enough of a history and all that type of stuff to expect a certain level of quality, should we say. Thomas Frank just seems to want to undermine that constantly. It seems to be that a lot of it is this air of like setting expectations very low. So he has a way of, you know, a type of self-preservation there, I guess. I think in a less nebulous sense, let's say, what have we seen all year is very little progress, actually zero progress from Tottenham at all. I don't think there's anything at this point compared to the start of the season where I could say, all right, it hasn't been going very well, but if we were to be fair to him, there is this green shoot. There's absolutely nothing. The bloke doesn't seem to know how to coach any form of attack other than get the ball to Mohamed Kudus or whoever's going to be replacing Mohamed Kudus at the moment, Wilson Odobert, and spam crosses into the box and hope that Richarlison or Solanke can get on the end of it. There is very, very little to his Tottenham other than this sense of pragmatism, which again isn't really working because we keep losing games. So
I was going to say, it's like it's all well and good being pragmatic, but if you're pragmatic to a point where that like it doesn't provide results either, it's kind of like a pointless pragmatism in that sense. And what I find really, really fascinating about this is having watched you come to the Etihad earlier this season, and I appreciate City are not the same City as they once were either, and this season's been a bit of a strange City where they've been good in patches and not good in other patches, so we don't know if this was specifically City being not good at the time. But you didn't let City get out. City had a lot of the ball, but only in their own defensive third. And it kind of surprised me that from that point on, Tottenham haven't really kicked on this season.
I mean, like, jokes aside, that game is really bizarre. It genuinely just feels again like another Spurs and City is an outlier. Yeah, we did it under Postecoglou and we've done it under this bum as well. But I can't explain it, but you know, there's no sign of progress. There's nothing in the trite comparison that I am far from the first to make is it's very Graham Potter at Chelsea. It's a guy who has come from a real, you know, from a well-oiled machine, the Brentford machine, if you like. You take them out of that system, you give them an ounce more autonomy, you start asking questions of them. Well, what do you think we should do right now? He doesn't really seem to have any answers. I mean, when your manager is being genuinely like tactically outthought by Scott Parker, with all due respect to Scott Parker, you know he's not really up to much. I still think there's enough quality in this team to not have to rely on a 94th minute equaliser against Wolves, who have been I'm pretty sure one of, if not the worst ever Premier League side to date, and pretty much outplayed by them for the game. You know, outplayed by a Nottingham Forest who hadn't won for however long before we played them. Outplayed, outfought by West Ham on our own patch who hadn't won for however many games before this. Nearly losing to Burnley who hadn't won in 13 before. There comes a point when you just sit there and just say, this bloke is just not, he's not cut out for this.
It's part of this, again, the lurching styles between managers that you've had. You think back to like the time when Spurs were really good under Pochettino. You had the consistency of him for several years. And then, I mean, you've been through Mourinho and Conte and Postecoglou and now to Frank, and you kind of lurch in between one style and another, and that sort of that level of consistency hasn't been there over the past few years. And then, I mean, even this season, I mean, has anything changed with Daniel Levy leaving?
I mean, that's sort of what is it, TBC? There are certain patterns in there that we're seeing that are hallmarks of a Tottenham transfer window. Let's say that there was a lot of talk when the Lewis children took over that they were going to do things differently, but you know, we've gone to this transfer window and fine, look, we got a Conor Gallagher deal done across the line, pretty sharpish. Apparently he's outside of our old wage constraints or that type of thing, i.e. we're paying him a lot, which is kind of fine. It's a shame that we've done that for Conor Gallagher, if you ask me, but I'm trying not to be negative about the deal, and I don't, you know,
open to it being a good thing.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, let's that's a good way of putting it, right? Let's do that. So there might be some things that are, you know, slightly different, but there's always a tinge that it's the same, in the respect that if we do look at Conor Gallagher, it's a fairly opportunistic deal. We know Atletico were open to selling him. We know that he wanted to come back to London specifically. It's an opportunistic deal for Spurs. Like, it doesn't mean it's all bad, but again, it's not Spurs going out there being proactive, using data like they keep saying that they do, to find somebody that is going to be able to fix the problem that we have, which is predominantly getting the ball forwards. You know, we've had James Maddison out all season. He's going to be out all season. We've got Dejan Kulusevski, who Christ knows what's happening with him, whether he's even going to have a viable career after he posted posted like an Instagram story of his knee operation for some reason. it was grisly, to say the least. Mm. But whether he's going to come back or not, we keep getting this, you know, supposedly going to be December, and then it's keeps kind of getting pushed back. And, you know, so we don't know. We're not really sure what's happening there. We've got nobody that can progress the ball. We've got nobody that can really pass the ball nicely. I mean, Javi Simmons arguably was supposed to be somebody that can do that, but you know, I will still extend a bit of the, you know, benefit of the doubt towards him, because I do see glimmers of promise with him. It just seems to be more about, you know, how do we get the ball to him? So there's nothing really that suggests that Spurs are actually trying to be smart about anything, that they are, you know, using, as they say, the platform, the wealth that they have to make Spurs, say, a better version of our Brighton. We're not going to be able to compete with City, with Chelsea, to be able to spend and all that type of thing, which is arguable because we are, according to Deloitte, whatever you call them, like the seventh richest sporting franchise on the face of the planet. So questions have to be asked on that front, but whatever, you know, if we're to say, okay, you're right, we can't spend the same as certain other clubs in the thing, we can at least be smart about it. But we just don't seem to, mate. We don't seem to. If we have a bad transfer window here, if we have another bad summer, you just sort of will ask yourself, what is it that we're doing now? Because we're lurching ever closer to the dangerous parts of the table. Just because Spurs are rich, and just because we've got this nice big stadium, and just because a few years ago we had Kane and Son up front from us, it doesn't mean we can't get relegated. I know that starts to sound a bit like head wobble, mouth breathing Spurs fan because we've had a couple of bad seasons, but our trend has been a negative one for a decade now, and we're sort of reaching the bottom of that, which is 17th last year. Fingers crossed we'll be okay again this year, mainly because there are teams that are worse than us in the league. But what happens the year when there aren't teams that are worse than us in the league? Because our form is relegation standard. Our form last year would have seen us, you know, our finishing points total I think somebody worked it out, would have seen us relegated more often than not in the Premier League.
It's a scary thought, isn't it? Yeah. All of that said, it is City at home or at the weekend. And there is this thing that happens whenever City come to town. So how are you feeling about this game in particular? How do you think he'll approach it? And obviously the charity bet's coming up. So what's your score prediction?
I mean, look, all the sort of joking, we always beat City stuff aside, like being, you know, rational about this, you know, we seldom create anything meaningful. We've relied on Christian Romero and Mickey van der Ven to basically score all of our goals the past, you know, I mean, Christian Romero scored like in three consecutive games, which I think is the first time a defender's done that in, I don't know however long at Tottenham. We've been having this sort of experiment where due to injuries and Champions League squad constraints, we played Jed Spence as a sort of Gareth Bale, if you like. We played him up top left and we had Destiny Adoghi playing behind him. We're usually sort of deciding who we want to play out of the two of them. We had both of them playing on the left and it actually worked out pretty well against Dortmund. We had not so much a freak result against Dortmund, but a freak performance against them. We played actually really well against them, regardless of them getting a red card during the week. But then it sort of feels like Frank has been like, well, it worked in that one, so let's stick Jed Spence top left again, against Burnley. He did that on the weekend. It's really hard to get a grip on what it is that he's going to do because I don't think he even knows really what he wants to do. Past his sort of sound bites that he gives us every press conference that we've played in a top fashion, we've got top players. One of his things, one of his sort of his things that he loves doing right now is saying, well, if you look at that last game, we had a 20-minute spell where we were really good. So what we want to do now is make sure that that 20-minute spell lasts for the whole game. And you're kind of like, do you think, Thomas? Like, do you reckon that'd be a good idea, mate? To play well for a whole game instead of just 20 minutes against Burnley? Like, but yeah, all right. Let's give that a go, shall we? So, how do I think it's going to go, mate? I think you should win. I'm never, I am dusty old gammon and all that. So I think I probably will. Jokes aside, say I don't ever really want to see Tottenham lose. I think Arsenal can undo themselves enough, fingers crossed, and you can catch them at another point. But we need points. We really need points. We have a horrible month coming up. I think we're 3 or 4 points above Nottingham Forest, who are 17th at the moment. And they've got a favourable run of games coming up. We're 8 points ahead of West Ham, who seem to be putting some form together. So this is one of those moments where we can't think about Arsenal. We've got to try and win. But do I think we'll win? I don't, mate. We're rotten, mate. We're rotten. We're really horrible. There's no Kane. There's no Son. There's no Sheringham. There's no Berbatov. There's no Bale. We don't have that player. And Spurs have always had that player, but we don't have that player. And that's what worries me the most.
What score am I telling the bookies for the charity bet? What are you going to have?
Let's say 3-1 City.
The holidays are expensive. You're paying for gifts, travel, decorations, food, and before you know it, you've blown way past what you were planning to spend. Don't start the new year off with bad money vibes. Download Rocket Money to stay on top of your finances. The app pulls your income, expenses, and upcoming charges into one place so you can get the clearest picture of your money. It shows how much to set aside for bills and how much is safe to spend for the month so you can spend with confidence. No guesswork needed. Get alerts before bills hit. Track budgets and see every subscription you're paying for. Rocket Money also finds extra ways to save you money by canceling subscriptions you're not using and negotiating lower bills for you. On average, Rocket Money users can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Start the year off right by taking control of your finances. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
The Blue Moon Podcast. If City won't let you down on the pitch, let us let you down off it instead.
That was Jack from Rule the Roost. Joe, we said earlier about Arsenal surely not letting City off the hook again and again and again. Does City have to go to Spurs and win because of that?
I think probably yes. And I genuinely think that having Arsenal play first this time round will be like a big difference maker in the um in
for
the way
for City or for Arsenal? Because for Arsenal, like, they've been going second a lot and then dropping points.
Yeah, I don't know how it could affect Arsenal, to be honest. It could be that they drop points again somehow. I have no idea, but I think that from a City point of view, like, I think we tend to react better in that sense. Like, if we have, like, you know, if they, it's a kind of a win-win. Like, if they drop points, then it's a right, we've got to capitalize on this. And if they win, it's like a right, well, we've got to stay in contention now. If we lose here, then it's like 7 points all of a sudden, and then it really is starting to look like it's game over. And I think that, you know, going into it, knowing what that Arsenal outcome is will hopefully make a big difference to the way that City, the players, certainly approach it. Because I feel like there's been a couple of games over this last month where the squad have looked like they're kind of sleepwalking and don't really have that same level of urgency and stuff like that. And that could just be a fitness thing, but it's not really what you want to see, is it? So, yeah, fingers crossed that Arsenal going first does have that impact on the team. But it definitely feels like we have to win it. And from a Spurs point of view as well, maybe they, I mean, they don't really like Thomas Frank. He's just got them into the top four of the Champions League, but it's not going well for them in the league. And, you know, are we looking at another situation where, like, us going to Spurs, like, does Spurs kind of not want us to, you know, if Arsenal go in 7 points ahead of us, a Spurs fan's going to be thinking, well, you know, maybe we could just lose this one. Like, we're already not doing very well in the league anyway. Let's just give them it and just see what happens. I don't think it'll quite be the same sort of, like, weird atmosphere that it was a couple of years ago when we did win it and in that second to last game of the season at the Spurs ground. But
God, I felt so ill in that game. That was horrendous.
It was horrific, wasn't it? I mean, that Ortega save still, like, is that moment where Son went through is still one of the most horrible feelings I've had for a long time. Yeah, and I just think I think that maybe Spurs, the atmosphere might be a little bit weird in there. But obviously it's been very flat as of late anyway, because of the way that their performances have generally been. But we really should be taking advantage of just how poor, especially after European games as well. They've not played well after having a European game midweek. They've just been away in Germany. We should be able to take full advantage of that, I think. And I know that obviously this is the bogey ground of all bogey grounds, but I'd hope that we can at least get something out of it this time around.
Yeah. Adam, how seriously do you take that the old curse thing? Because Jack's just explained how bad Spurs are this season. Okay, we did it before the Frankfurt game, so they hadn't won that at the time. City have been a bit up and down at times. They've been a bit up and down in the last couple of weeks, but they've got the freshness of Gehi and Semenyo back in there. You've got the performances of Wolves and Galatasaray to kind of build on. It feels like City should be in a good position. And yet it's Spurs away and we're all doing that same old thing again. So like can you seriously just dismiss the history on that ground?
We should be able to, but I'm very much obviously the numbers guy, and it doesn't matter how bad Spurs are, 9 out of the last 11 times they've beaten us, they've gone on to lose their following game. So they do, there's the hoodoo there that they step up when they play against us. Obviously, we'll exclude the time that they let us win and they all wore blue to the ground. That was very, very nice. But no, I don't think the players will care. I don't even think the players will know. People like Shirky, Reinders, Semenyo, Gay, they won't feel that weight, but the fans will feel the weight. Us podcasting about it, talking about it, dwelling on it, will always put a bit of weight and value on that. I always do. I don't know why. It's the way I'm kind of wired. I always look for patterns and trends, and I always think Spurs have got the beating of us on that ground. So I won't be watching it comfortably. I think we'll still have a job to do when we get there, even though they're in a poor run of form in terms of the league campaign. But yeah, I always look at those numbers, and I'm already beaten because of what's gone on before. Negatively.
How about Newcastle then, though, Adam? Because City are 2-0 up in this from the first leg. This one's at the Etihad, where Newcastle's record is frankly appalling. How much leeway can Guardiola use in this game? Because it is sandwiched between this Spurs game, where they're probably going to have to win, and then a game at Anfield, another ground where they just don't win.
Yeah, I think he will go full strength. Obviously, he'll bring Trafford in as the cup keeper. But I think what we'll aim to do is a similar performance like against Galatasaray and Wolves, where if we get our noses in front, we play the type of game where we're not letting anything else happen thereafter. And I think that'll be enough because of the two-goal cushion we've got to see them. They'll come out all guns blazing because they have to score at least three. So I think that'll play in our favour, that they'll be a bit more gung-ho and we might be able to take the sting out of the game. At home, I'd much rather the second leg at home, so that's in our advantage as well. We've just been there and beaten them 2-0. We've got the measure of them in terms of this tie, so I'm convinced as long as we're able to put a full team out, it should be enough. And I think he will put a full team out, even though he'd like to not have to do that, given the fixtures that are surrounding it.
Yeah, that being said, Joe, we have just spent a long time talking about the options that he's got now, where he could put Nico O'Reilly in holding midfield, let Rodri and Nico Gonzalez have the night off. He could choose Aitnori at left back instead and allow him to make that move. You've obviously got Gay who's available to play. Like there are options that he can bring in. I mean, even up front now, he's got the options between Marmoush and Haaland. And I mean, Doku's likely to still be injured at this stage because it looks like it's going to be a few weeks. But like there are other players that he could pick from in these positions where in the previous games he's kind of had to go from 11 from 12.
Yeah, this is the thing. I think we're starting to see that now that the players are back. And obviously, he said in a press conference. Earlier this week or just after the was that just before or after the Wolves game, I think, where Pep was sort of saying, just, you know, if you think things aren't great at the moment, like, just let me have my players back, like let me have the squad back and then we'll see what I can do. And I think that, but as we're starting to see more of them come back into fitness, I think Nico Gonzalez coming back in particular, sort of getting a bit of time off the bench against Galatasaray is big, because I don't know how controversial this is to say, but I think we've looked worse since Rodri has come in instead of Nico Gonzalez.
I think the diplomatic way to say it is he's not up to speed, is he?
No, and that's fine. But it's just that Nico G has become so crucial to how we've looked this season that having him out for a little bit has been a real problem. I'm hoping that it's just a case of, I'm hoping that it's not actually been like a very serious. He's not played for, is it a month or 6 weeks or something like that? He's been out, and I think that I'm hoping
New Year's
that
Day. He went off against Sunderland New Year's Day.
Yeah, so I'm hoping that it's not been, you know, a really bad one, and that they've just kind of wrapped him in cotton wool for a bit and wait until he's like absolutely 100% before dropping him back in. Kind of same as Rodri, just to a lesser extent.
Could you see him and Rodri starting together at Spurs and at Anfield?
See, I'd love to see that. I'd love it. I think since Nico Gonzalez has been in this side and sort of what he can do for us, like in terms of the physicality side of things, I've wanted to see him and Rodri together for a long time, where Rodri can sort of do that. Maybe you take a little bit of the defensive pressure off Rodri, because Nico Gonzalez's biggest strength is that he can win the ball back a little bit higher up the pitch. He can, you know, he wins the aerial duels. He's quite physical. And obviously Rodri is as well, but Rodri's biggest strength on top of that is the fact that he's so creative going forwards. Like even those first few games where he came back from the injury, he was topping like chance creation numbers every game that he was playing for those first few. So yeah, having someone who can maybe take a little bit of the defensive load off Rodri, but ultimately still have two effective, solid, you know, physical midfielders against, like, you know, against teams when they attack us, I'd love to see it. And I really hope that the big games, like, you know, like Spurs and Liverpool, they're the games where I'd love to see Pep try it. But I'm not sure if they're. I don't know if they're the kind of games. It's two ways with Guardiola, is it? Either it's the it's a massive game, so he does something that he's never done before, and that's it. Or he wants to maybe give it a go against like a smaller team and then bring it in against a big team. But I can, knowing Pep, I would maybe say it's probably more likely to be the former, that he'll just throw him in out of nowhere, having never played together at Anfield, and we just watch it happen.
Would you play Bernardo as well as those two?
He's going to play right wing, isn't he? There's no way Bernardo doesn't play if it's a big game. Bernardo, he loves Bernardo in the big games, yeah. Doesn't he?
And I think player of the season for me. That's why I'm asking.
Really?
Because I too would love to see Gonzalez and Rodri in a midfield, just a midfield of bastards, basically, because we lacked that for so long. But you can't have a team of bastards and not have Bernardo in it. So it's just be interesting where he fits in. I mean, Bernardo could play everywhere, can't he? He was up front at points yesterday, and then he was the furthest back last night as well. So
I mean, I wouldn't put him in goal. Not great in the air, I don't think. Yeah.
No. Apart from that, I'd definitely have him in any position on the pitch. And I'd love to see, if we've got to go to an away ground where we're not particularly doing well and we've got to grind it out, I think those three being on the pitch could be the difference. Mm. So I would like to see that. Yeah. However negative that sounds, I think we've changed the way we play this season anyway, so it wouldn't be massively out of the ordinary to kind of shore up something like we did at Arsenal away earlier in the season.
Yeah. Well, we will get predictions for those games now. No wins on the podcast once again last week, so we're still on £280 for the Man City Fans Food Bank Support Group. Honestly, we have been appalling at this season. We're normally on at least double this by this stage. William Hill has given us three £10 correct score singles, and we're giving the winnings to the Food Bank Group. Spurs and Newcastle to come. You two have got your work cut out to try and add some money to this kitty at this stage. And funnily enough, we will start with you two. Normally, I'd give the guests the first one, but we'll start with you two for Spurs. Adam, what are you having?
One all.
One all is 6-1 and £60. Joe, what have you got?
2-2.
2-2 is 11-1 and £110. And it's coming to something when the opposition guest is the only one who predicts a City win, because he's gone for 3-1 to City, which is also 11-1 and £110 if he's right. And that takes us to the Carabao Cup second leg, Newcastle. Adam, what are you having?
1-0, noses in front and then stifle it.
Excellent. That's 7-1, £70. Joe?
I said 2-0, but I said that before I realised it was sandwiched between Spurs and Anfield. So maybe it's not. Maybe the odds might be a bit higher on that.
8-1 and £80 if you're right. I've gone for 2-1, split the difference, 13-2 and £65 if I'm right. Remember, you've got to be 18 or over to gamble. Prices can change. And for information on responsible gambling, have a look at gambleaware.org. We'll squeeze in some listener questions to finish. Get in touch on Blue Sky at bluemoonpodcast.com. The email address is contact@bluemoonpodcast.com. And you can find us on Instagram as well. I quite often try and put a story up with a sticker in to send some questions in. But I've been forgetting to do that. I remembered this week. And that's why all three questions come from Instagram. We'll start with this from Simon, who says, how did Oscar Bob's stock fall so dramatically? Did he just get a nasty injury at the wrong time? Adam, I'm impressed by your ability to think every player is the next, the next Phil knowledge. Foden. The next,
he was that one.
Yeah, Sean Wright Phillips, the next big hero. So how does it feel to see Oscar Bob moving on at this stage?
Exactly. I love how much you know that, because any new prospect that comes through the academy, I hang all my hopes on them. Listeners to the podcast will recognise this same drivel that I give when a new guy's coming up through the ranks. He was absolutely my next big thing. Not as if I've unearthed him, but just I pinned all my hopes on him when he was coming through. That pre-season he had just before the injury, he tore United apart for the equaliser for Bernardo. He tore Chelsea apart in the pre-season before that. It was absolutely flying. And obviously, I've pinned all my hopes. We were winning everything. We were winning the boat race. We were winning the general election. We were winning celebrity X Factor with him in the team. And then all of a sudden, he's going out the back door to Fulham. And that is a bitter taste in the mouth. But I don't think it's the wrong decision either. So you can imagine how heartbroken I am, given all the plaudits I was ready to label him with.
Yeah, it seems like it's $27 million, Joe, which is it seems like a pretty good price for a player that is ultimately he hasn't proven himself at City. He's had not many opportunities either. In fairness, he's had a few moments like the Newcastle goal, for instance, but ever since the injury, it's just he's not looked like the same player, has he?
No, he's had the goal against Newcastle, and he had the first game of the season against Wolves, which I think the season Wolves have gone on to have has proven that may not necessarily be reflective of his overall quality, and just says more about Wolves than it does about anybody who performed well that day. I just think it's he's 22. I think that's the other thing as well that people maybe don't remember when it comes to Oscar Bob, because he's sort of come into it so late. Probably not helped by the fact that he was out for a year with an injury, but yeah, he's not a 19-year-old coming into the team. He's a 22-year-old, and a lot of clubs now, like 22-year-olds, are kind of like, if you're not already quite established at the age of 22, it's very unlikely that you're going to actually then be given the extra time to develop and make it. So I think $27 million is a bit, considering that we were being sort of teased with the idea of like a 30 to 40 million sale, maybe 27's on a little bit of a low side. But on the other hand, we got a 20% sell on clause, and I think that will inevitably bear some fruit in the future. So it's long term, it's hard to say that it's really the wrong thing to do.
Yeah, I know Phil Foden can't be the bar for what gets into the City team, but if my maths is correct, when he was 22, he was winning the treble with City. And that kind of indicates the level, although he wasn't in the treble team towards the end of that season, was he? So maybe that's a bad comparison. Adam, Dom's been in touch on Instagram to say, would you take Raheem Sterling back on a short-term deal after he's left Chelsea?
So this is weird when I saw this question, because I asked myself that when I saw that Chelsea were looking to offload him. A, I forgot he was even there for parts. And I think it's actually quite disgusting how they've treated him towards the latter end of his Chelsea career there. However, I wouldn't have him back.
You can't go back, can you?
No, and unless it was Sean Wright Phillips, I was pleased when we went back for that one.
I knew
I would have gone. There was a time when I would have gone back for Sane as well. So I would have put him and Sterling in the same bracket, but I did muse the question to myself for about 3 seconds and then realised towards the end of his career with us as well, it was a bit toxic. Well, I was a big Raheem fan, more so retrospective looking back at what he did rather than frustratingly when he was missing sitters at the back post. But yeah, I wouldn't take him, but I can see why that question's been asked, because I did ask it myself.
Mm. Joe, it's one of those where... I do think when City when he moved on from City, I do remember thinking Haaland's coming in this summer. Why don't you want to stay? Why don't you want to stay and do this? Because it was his decision to move on. It wasn't the club pushing him out. And you look at how his career's gone since. It doesn't feel like the sort of player that you would take a chance on being able to refine that spark, does it?
No. A million trillion percent no. Like, Raheem Sterling is just not a very good footballer anymore, I don't think. Like, it's crazy how, like, he's the drop-off has been, like, so... Like, you could see in that final season that he had with us before he did eventually leave, I thought he was nowhere near good enough for us at that point. Like, he was putting in some really just crap performances. It was just running... running directly into defenders and just kind of hoping that the ball would fall for him and he'd get out the other side. It felt like he lost a bit of I think the team was obviously also in a bit of a transition as well. We didn't have a striker, which is obviously when he found his best form, when he was playing cutting in on that left with a striker there to sort of like take a lot of the space away from him. So maybe his job was made a little bit more difficult by that. But it was, you could see the decline was sort of beginning at that point, but it's turbo accelerated since he left us. I mean, that first season at Chelsea was like maybe like acceptable, I suppose, but then he had like a loan to Arsenal where he did basically nothing, and then since then it's just kind of been, you know, existence and not really a lot else. But when it comes to the idea of getting him back, I feel really harsh on Sterling because I find it so much easier to remember how I felt when he missed that chance against Lyon than I do any of the other things that he did for us. Like that
brilliant
is the most.
City. Yeah,
there's two the two most visceral feelings I have about Raheem Sterling the goal against Southampton in the last minute in that 17-18 season that kept the unbeaten or that kept the winning run going, and that miss against Lyon. And sadly, that miss against Lyon is the much stronger feeling out of the two. Yeah,
he needs to get to Bolton and West Brom anyway to complete the Nicolas Anelka stroke Daniel Sturridge journey round English football. Final question then for this week comes from Hamish on Instagram. What's the most aggravated you've been over a long since gone decision? Young on Aguero in 2018 for me. I feel like we did this one recently, Adam, because my first thought on this was when Richard Dunn's free kick was disallowed at West Brom in 2005 because Graham Poole hadn't blown his whistle, had he?
Yeah, God, we're still seething over that one. I think that's certainly landed in some of our top 10 lists over the years, definitely. I'm obviously still annoyed at the Dalot decision last week. I think that's what this question's alluding to.
Long since gone. We can't have one that happened a fortnight ago.
I'm annoyed at the Spurs Champions League last minute disallowed goal.
That was going to be mine. It's the correct decision.
I was going to say, this is the correct decision. Okay. To be aggrieved, it's got to be a bad decision, hasn't it?
The Llorente handball.
Okay, yeah, all right, correct. I'll take that one.
All the same game. It just compounded it, but yeah, is that long since enough?
I think if we're taking Ashley Young on Aguero in 2018, we've got to be able to take the Spurs game in 2018.
Do you want a weird one? Do you remember?
I'm awful weird.
The Jolyon Lescott handball against Burnley in the 3-3 at Etihad. Do you remember that?
Do not remember that.
Cross came in from the side. Yes, he had his arm up. Yes, it was probably an unnatural position. Yes, it probably was the right decision. So I'm backtracking now, but I just remember feeling furious about that.
Are you only saying that that was the right decision because we went so heavy on the Wolves one earlier?
Yes, yes.
I have a couple, both against United. So one of them is it might have been the League Cup semi-final back in 2010 or 11. Company's red card against Nanny.
Oh, I think FA Cup, third round.
I feel like that was just that was an absolute, like, he went through the ball and got Nanny, and for some reason that was given as a red card, and I'll never ever understand it to this day. The second one I have in mind is more recent, so not quite so long gone, but that Marcus Rashford, Bruno Fernandes offside goal that was given inexplicably somehow. I still cannot fathom that is one of, when I think of reasons why VAR shouldn't exist, and there are a lot of them, I think the fact that they couldn't identify that as a clear error is mental. So
can I blow your mind even further, Joe? That was given offside on the field. The VAR allowed it. The VAR saw it and did and saw an error. They didn't say, nope, this is the correct decision. They saw the decision and went, nope, this is the wrong decision.
That's mental. That's
God,
worse.
I hate VAR. Yeah.
Now you've wound me up all over again.
Good. It's good that it's not evening. You've got to try and sleep soon. So if we've missed any of the most horrendous decisions or ones that wound you up, do let us know at bluemoonpodcast.com, on Blue Sky, email contact at bluemoonpodcast.com. Find us on Instagram as well. Let us know. But for now, that is it for this episode. Thank you very much to my guests for this one. Adam Carter.
A pleasure.
And Joe Butterfield.
Thank you very much.
There's a clip coming up in a moment from this week's Nostalgia Show. That was Dom Farrell inducting Danny Teato into the Cult Hero Hall of Fame. If you want to hear the full thing right now, then head on over to members.bluemoonpodcast.com. I'll be back next week to review the dreaded trip to Spurs and preview the dreaded trip to Liverpool. See you then.
That was the Blue Moon Podcast. Please give the show a rating and a review where you can. And don't forget, you can listen without the ads by signing up to our Patreon. You'll also get an extra episode each Monday. Here's a clip of this week's.
Yeah, Thompson was over the ball as well in mitigation. Teato was just more over the ball.
Yeah.
So my memory of this game. So Keegan picked a bit of a funky team here. He like started Chris Schuker up front with an Elka when Sean Gault was on the bench, who then comes on and scores an equaliser when City down 10 men. I mean, I have my views on what Keegan was like with the Royal Stalwarts, and this game sort of speaks volumes about it.
I think a lot of the Royal Stalwarts have that view as well, you know.
Yeah, we'll defer to Mark Kennedy. So I was sat in a family standstill at this time, and, you know, not the most vocal bit of the ground, and it'd been a bit of a stinking performance. Blackburn had York and Cole up front, so that was probably why my dad's quite angry. And he was imploring to get Teato on for like pretty much from half time. Teato was warming up, and a lot of the other crowd cheering Teato on. My dad was like, this game needs Danny Teato. He's shouting and shouting for Teato to come on. Oh man, his face, 7 minutes after coming on, he does that to Thompson. My dad was like, he was like open mouthed and just quiet and just like sat down. I mean, I dare say if City hadn't scored two goals at the end, he wouldn't have said another word for the rest of the day.
You can listen to more of that at patreon.com/Blue Moon Podcast, and join us again next time for another episode.